It's August 2007, and this is the Music is Art podcast number 19B. Welcome. My name is John Jenkins, and this is the official podcast for the Spotted Peccary Wanderings and O3E record labels. If you recall, in podcast 19A, we asked for you guys to call in and give us some questions and let you determine what we're going to talk about on this. So joining me today, Mr. David Helpling. Hello, David. Welcome.
Hello, John.
This is podcast 19B. Our new album, Treasure, came out about 6 weeks ago. In the last podcast, we asked you guys to call in with some questions. This is the podcast where David and I are going to answer your questions. Thank you, everyone who called them in.
It was so cool for all those people to actually call, pick up the phone, call, and leave a recorded question for us.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that was a bold experiment.
Yeah.
We could have had no calls. But
yeah, there could have been a serious letdown. But no, that was really cool for all those people to call in. And some of these questions are really intelligent and interesting, and some, as we'll find out, a little difficult to answer.
Let's just get right to it. What do you say, David?
Sounds great. Let's hear him.
Here it is. First question.
Hey, guys. This is your buddy Pete out here in the burbs of Washington, D.C. Just want to say I'm really digging Treasure a lot. It's getting some serious play in my vehicles, office, home, etc. And I've got several questions. So if your voicemail runs out of time, I'll just call back and be obnoxious and leave another message, okay? So on to my questions. First one is, I know that the genesis of Treasure was your initial collaboration on False Summit. Were there many more pieces not on Treasure that were created uniquely for False Summit? In other words, any idea if the False Summit soundtrack might ever see a release? Okay. Second question I have is...
Okay, wait, we'll pause it here and answer Pete's first question. And the answer is yes, there's a lot of music from False Summit that is not on Treasure. The piece that's playing right now in the background is from False Summit, not on Treasure. There's only one track on Treasure that was from the film, and that is The Frozen Channel. And it actually wasn't even intended for the film.
Yeah, it was one of these ideas that we were working on when we were supposed to be doing the film. And we go off on these tangents and start creating this great music. And that track ended up going into the film. So it's pretty interesting the way things work out.
Recently, we went back and listened to a lot of this stuff. And it will probably never be released. It's not, you know, when you listen to it all together, it's film music. It's not an interesting CD.
Well, you know how I feel about film music. All music is worthy, and when we listened to this again, it had been 7 years since I had heard it, okay, since the film was finished. And it was really fun to hear all this music that we did that I sort of filed away in the back of my mind. But when you listen to it, as it is for the film, these are short pieces of music, a minute and a half, a minute, 2 minutes. I think we had one track that ended up being 5 minutes, but it was a lot of end titles kind of stuff. So it's good music, but I don't think it's the kind of thing that is deep enough or has enough material to really release as some kind of album.
All right, next question, Pete.
How did you guys inspire yourselves when you were in the middle of the project? Did you hit any like real dry patches where you like just had to take a break? And if so, what did you do to remotivate yourself?
That's a good question. I don't recall exactly, but I think it was a little bit of the opposite. It was about having enough time. Every time we got together, it was sort of a flurry of ideas and just trying to catch them in time before we lost them, get them down, and then focus on things. So it was always just about when we were working together, trying to take advantage of that time to really realize the songs that deserve to go past just an idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them dry patches. There were days. There are always days when things just aren't going right.
Oh, I had a couple days where I was sort of in a funk. But because it's a collaboration, when I'm not bringing my A game, John steps up and things are all good. So
and vice versa.
And vice versa, possibly.
But yeah, and there are times when we would we'd spend some time on something and chase it down and end up realizing we were just we're going down a dead-end road there, so, you know.
It was the chase that was interesting, but yeah. The end product wasn't as fun as the chase.
Yeah, but that's not really a dry patch. That's just a wrong turn.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's go back to Pete now. And you know what? Actually, let's not. Let's go to someone else. We'll come back to Pete's questions, but let's give someone else a chance right now.
Hello, David and John. My name is Sonny James, and I'm calling from California. The very first song on Treasure, Grand Collision, has a unique percussive sound. I would have never guessed the source had it not been for the Echoes interview. What made you think of using the birdcage wires as a way to come up with a percussive instrument. I mean, I've heard several non-conventional ideas for creating new sounds in the past, especially in industrial and space music, but this is possibly the most original I've ever heard. Well done, gentlemen. Thank you.
Sonny, nice to hear from you, man. This has become a pretty common and popular inquiry into the production.
Yeah, since the Echoes interview came out and revealed that secret, people have found that pretty interesting. It's an interesting story because David actually created the birdcage samples. He was inspired by the birdcage sound and decided just to create the samples without any, you know, knowing what he was going to use them for.
In fact, when I had done all my work and I had this big, brilliant idea to create some kind of playable birdcage instrument, I was really disappointed with the way it sounded. And I just didn't get inspired to just play it by itself.
But you did show it to me. You said, hey, check out this cool birdcage.
Well, I said, check it out. Because, yeah, you know, as a needy guy, I need recognition for my work.
And I said, hey, good job, man.
Yeah.
Way to
that,
go.
And I was already fulfilled. That was enough. We didn't have to use it on the record. Just tell me it's cool because I worked my ass off for like 2 days. And the sound wasn't vibing.
It was vibing. It's just like, what would you ever use this for?
It was vibey, yet useless.
Right. So it just became this thing that was in the sound library that David thought would never get used. And then, months later, we're working on this track, looking for some kind of thing to put in this section of the track. We had tried everything, I think.
We went through our usual collection of sounds that we were excited about at the time.
And it just dawned on me at one point, hey, what about that birdcage thing? So we pulled it up just for fun, you know, as a last resort.
Yeah.
Basically, plugged it in, played the part in the track, and both of our eyes got really wide, and we said, that's it.
Yeah, and it's another example of taking a sound and putting it in a sonic space, and it just came to life. And obviously, I was very excited that the sound would see the light of day. But there you have it, Sonny.
Okay, let's go back to Pete.
Besides the birdcage, which I thought was really creative, what's the next most off-the-wall, tweaked-out sample that we're hearing on Treasure? And what track is it on? Can we hear some before and after versions here on the podcast?
Jeez, Pete. Man, you want to know what sound it was? Can you hear some before and after versions? Wow.
Yeah, we could do that. Go ahead. Pull some of it up on the computer there.
Okie doke.
I know we've said this before, but a lot of the sounds that you hear on the record are guitar-derived. And what we did was, a long time ago, when we were working on Fall Summit, we did these sessions where David would play the guitar and I would run it through a bunch of different effects and processors and kind of make it sound, you know, not at all like a guitar. And we'd just come up with these cool ambiences. And then we would take those and bring them into a sampler and manipulate them, maybe use a little piece of it. And a good example of that is like the first sound you hear on the song Into the Deep. And I think David has that pulled up right now.
So here is the normal sound. It was called Slice Number 8 at the time. And it sounds like this. Pretty cool. So that's John and I doing the guitar through lots of cool stuff thing. And what we did is we put this really cool filter on it, which I'm doing right now. And we took just this little part of it and we took it down like an octave or something. So that's the sound taken down. And if I hit it softly, it's sort of dark and mushy and dreamy. And if we slam it, it's sort of bright and buzzy. And somewhere in the middle, a little bit of magic as it opens up. Stick a little reverb on it, and pretty soon we're into the deep. Pete, that was awesome that you asked that. It was cool to bring this sound up and hear what it used to sound like years ago. Totally cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a long journey from playing a note on a guitar to getting to that. So you can see there's a lot of manipulation involved and unconventional thinking as far as creating an interesting sound. Other things that come to mind as far as tweaked out sounds, as you say, the birdcage is probably the most interesting one. Several points on the record, you'll hear a sound that kind of sounds like a piano, but maybe not exactly like a piano. That is a sampling session that we did where David took a number two Dixon Ticonderoga pencil and inside the piano actually struck the strings with the eraser. So we recorded him hitting every single note inside the piano with the pencil eraser and created a playable virtual instrument out of that that we call Dixon.
So Dixon... you sort of thin that out and put this cool reverb on it, and you have...
very nice. And that's on the record on several different tracks. I know for sure it's on track 9, This Day Forward. So there you go, Pete, some before and after samples.
Hi, David. John. It's Jonathan Miller here.
Hey, it's Jonathan Miller, our buddy from the UK. Good to hear from him, man.
Awesome. Yeah. So nice to hear your voice, Jonathan.
Yeah.
My treasure-related question for you guys is, how do you go about creating and recording those wonderfully expansive ambient pad-type parts that can be found throughout the new album? Such as those that joined the Frozen Channel, to Now More Than Ever, for example. Time to spill the beans, guys. Bye for now.
So Jonathan, all the way from the UK, wants us to spill the beans on how we create the big pad-type sounds. I think some people might not understand that term, pad. So a pad is a sound that is sustaining and usually warm in nature.
Yeah, kind of an underlying bed of sound that doesn't really play a major role in the melody.
Like a sustaining string chord that goes for an extended period of time. So how do we create those expansive sounding pads?
That's a tough question because it can be a lot of different things. It always involves some kind of serious manipulation with effects and reverb and stuff like that. No matter what the source material is, it always involves some kind of processing.
That's a good point. A lot of these types of sounds that Jonathan was mentioning don't sound like that right out of the gate. It's more about creating a sound that works in that particular song, and I think it's probably a little different in every case. He mentioned the Frozen Channel.
Yeah. I think actually in that track, it's a pretty complex combination of things that makes that opening. A few layers of guitar involved and a couple of synth layers involved that are just kind of looping. And then we took all of that and ran it through some kind of a pattern gate and then ran that output through a big reverb to add all the space to it and maybe some pitch shifting. And it's just a combination of all these things that creates this really nice space.
That's an interesting point because when you listen to it, it just sounds like one...
it sounds like one atmosphere, one space.
Yeah. It may come across as one sound or one sort of presence. You know, sometimes a sound that comes across that simple can be made up of up to, say, 20 parts.
Sure.
When we have, like, 5 layers of guitar in a loop and then a couple different synthesizers and then an effect that's been recorded and then re-effected and all of that together to sort of create the thing we were going for.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jonathan's question is a complex one, riddled with danger.
Yeah, so basically to answer your question, Jonathan, it's always a different process, but usually it involves some kind of big reverb at the end.
So yes.
It's always a different combination of things that makes up the bed or the pad.
Yeah, like we said before, there is a lot of guitar dressed up to the point where it is very ambiguous as to exactly what the source is. And that's not on purpose. That's just how it came out and how it fit what we were trying to say in the track. So, Jonathan, awesome. Awesome question. Nice to hear from you.
Thanks, Jonathan, for the question. And I guess now we'll play the Frozen Channel so you can hear that. Okay, we have an email-only question here that we got from Gabriel Carafa. Hopefully I'm saying that right, Gabriel.
We apologize if we have mispronounced your name.
Gabriel writes in and he says, John and David, I hope you get to read this because it's easier for me to email than record an MP3. I just wanted to say that I found both of your work to be a great inspiration in my own adventures as a composer and guitarist. Thank you, Gabriel. I was just wondering if you guys would be inclined to discuss some of the instrumentation that you used. On the Echoes interview, there was some discussion, but as a composer and a guitarist, I'm particularly interested in the guitars and keyboards used and how these instruments affected your compositional style.
Wow.
Good question, Gabriel.
We use guitars and we use keyboards.
Yeah, we use guitars. I have a Fernandez sustainer guitar that I use.
Well, let's talk about that. It was only used on one track, but it was used in a huge way on this record.
Right. That was used on Into the Deep.
Into the Deep.
All that sustain-y, distorted guitar.
So the Fernandez guitar has this pickup in it. It's called a sustainer pickup. And it duplicates what another thing does. It's called an Ebo, which is this thing with a battery in it that you place over the strings and it magnetically makes it vibrate like it's constantly being bowed. So you just hold this thing over the strings and move your hands around, and it's almost like a theremin or a voice-like sound. But the guitar that John has one of those pickups built into it. So you just flip a switch, and it starts going.
It just constantly vibrates the string, and you can move your finger back and forth along the frets, and it's just constantly singing, you know, basically.
Yeah, and to have the pickup in the guitar is so great, because I'm a tremolo guy. It's a little tremolo arm that lets you bend and wiggle the notes. And without having to hold an Ebo, you could actually play the guitar fluidly and bend notes up and down. And there's a couple places where you really hear notes literally bending while they're being bowed on Into the Deep. And there's no way it would have even been possible without that guitar of John's.
Yeah, so that's a great example of how instrumentation can affect your compositional style.
You have the most awesome guitar out of all of us.
I do. I have the Parker Fly Deluxe that I got from Steve Roach.
It appears to have magical powers.
Steve definitely put some of his mojo into this guitar. It's amazing to play.
Awesome. I've got a bunch of guitars. Fender Strat, a Parker Wannabe Fly Deluxe, Fender P-Bass, some modified things. Regular guitars. I don't have anything super fancy. I do have all of the volume knobs ripped off of my guitars. I just use the pickup straight to a volume pedal. I'm a little eccentric in that way. And we use tons of keyboards.
Yeah, so many different ones. I don't even know if I could name them all. And yeah, basically, using these tools can affect your compositional style, because a lot of times, it's a quest for a wonderful sound. And once you find that sound, then it leads to a great piece, or it sends you down this path of coming up with a really cool piece of music. That said, a lot of times you're hearing something in your head, and then you're bringing up these tools and trying to create what you're hearing in your head. So it works both ways. It's probably 50-50. Half the time, your instrumentation will affect your compositional style, and the other half, your compositional style will affect what you do with the instruments.
I'm Rick from Corpus Christi, Texas. And the question is, what do y'all consider on a personal level, from each one of y'all, the most important electronic recording of, say, the 70s and also of the 80s? That's it. Thank you.
Oh, man. Tough one. That's a tough one, Rick.
I suppose that you're asking us because maybe you want to know what piece of electronic music is important to us. Or are we supposed to decide for the whole nation and the world as it will, what is the single most important electronic music of the 70s or 80s? I'm a fish out of water here, John.
I don't consider myself an expert on this. I haven't listened to a lot. I mean, I've listened to a fair amount of electronic music, but not like...
Well, I'll often confess, as I have before, I haven't listened and still do not listen to, I think, what we're talking about, electronic music here. And I sort of got into music in the very early 80s, 1980. I would guess it was some kind of innovator like Tangerine Dream or Brian Eno or something, but I don't even know of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, the 70s, probably, if you're looking for an overall most important thing, it's probably going to be one of those early Tangerine Dream albums like, what's it called? Phaedra. I mean, that's always looked at as a groundbreaking, seminal release of the 70s. A lot of the early Klaus Schulze stuff, which I was never really into, so I couldn't really name any of them, I think. For me, one of the great recordings of the 70s that really got me going and into the music was Tangerine Dream's Force Majeure, which was, you know, a bit later on after Phaedra. That was an important one to me. And for the 80s, I guess I would have to say, and again, this is just for me, and I can't really just pick one, but Ancient Dreams. Patrick O'Hearn's Ancient Dreams.
That's right.
To me, that recording came along and it changed everything. It was very organic while still being electronic. I've said this on the podcast before, but if I had not heard that album in 1980, whatever it was, I probably wouldn't be sitting here today. That's one of the things that really made me want to do this music. I mean, he was doing things in ways that nobody had done before. And all of a sudden, you know, you could do this kind of music and be cool and sound, you know, not sound too pretty and not sound too weird.
It was really musical. I'm not to say other great works were, but it wasn't making noise and about drones and things like that. There was a lot of music and a lot of things being said electronically in the music, and I think it was something new.
And it wasn't just the sequencer thing, you know, the Tangerine Dream style sequencer.
No, it wasn't the German-based style.
Which by then had become a bit repetitive. So, yeah, Ancient Dreams in the 80s. Also in the 80s, I would say Steve Roach's Structures from Silence and Dreamtime Return, both. Those are two really key albums for me.
I still got nothing for you, Rick. I'm sorry. I'm just not that deep in quote-unquote electronic music.
Okay, what are some key recordings for you, regardless of when?
Well, you know, you talk about the question was the most important electronic recordings. I think BT's last release, This Binary Universe, is completely groundbreaking and taking a turn in a new direction for the first time and completely electronic, organic, but full of emotion. And he's doing things that only he does because he is a true innovator, and I'm a big BT fan.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Rick, that does not answer your question for the era, but that's something that's I consider a very significant work and is probably going to change things a little bit.
Yeah. Other recordings that I think are important. This may have been the 90s, I don't even know, but like Mark Isham's film music.
Yeah, Mark Isham's early scores were mostly completely electronic with some trumpet. Never Cry Wolf, I didn't even know that it was him at the time. I just listened to it and it blew my mind.
Yeah. That's stuff that I find important.
Didn't Stearns do a bunch of awesome stuff with modular synths and stuff?
Yeah, Planetary Unfolding is great. That's usually considered a very important release, and that's worth checking out if you can find a copy.
And he's huge into the modular synthesis and all of that stuff at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There's only a few people doing that and doing it well. I do know that.
So there you go, Rick. I'm sorry we're not really experts on this, but that's the best we can do.
Very daunting question.
Yeah. Let's go back to Pete.
Who's the digital artist, okay? Who's more into the digital art? Is it John or is it Dave or both of you? And how did you guys get into the artwork of Ryan Bliss and Marcus Gann? Do either of you guys generate your own CG art? And I guess that's enough with the Inquisition for now. So thanks to you both for a great disc and for continuing with the podcasts. I really enjoy them, and best regards to you both. All right? Kowalski out. Later.
Thanks, Pete. That's actually, I'm going to let David answer this because he's the man who finds all the cool images.
I am not a CG artist at all. I am a Photoshop geek, but I don't create images. Towards the end of Treasure, when things were complete and we knew things were happening, we needed a cover. We had a hard time finding an image that spoke what the music was about. And we came up with a lot of different ideas and looked at a lot of different art. We contacted several different artists. And at some point, I was looking at the internet, and there's a website called digitalblasphemy.com, which has all of these great CG images that are basically digital landscapes. And there's this one image that was in a pile of ones that I downloaded that I showed to John, and I could see he had a physical reaction to it. He was like, oh, wait a second, that's pretty interesting. And to get a reaction from John means that it must be worthy in some way. So it became a contender. I think it was one of 10 covers we were trying to play with. And it became very clear very quickly that that was the image that spoke what Treasure was about.
Mm-hmm.
And just after Treasure was done, I stumbled upon this German artist, Marcus Gann, who is amazing. His digital artwork blows my mind. It's a cut above anything else I've seen. We've been in contact with him, and he was generous enough to let us use one of his images for the homepage of deepexile.com.
He definitely does some really amazing work.
Cool. Thanks, Pete. Thank you.
Hi, this is Craig from West Palm Beach, Florida. My first question was, are John and David planning on collaborating again in the future? Treasure has been the exclusive occupier of my CD player in my car and at home since I purchased it about a month ago. It's a really great album. And then my second question is...
Actually, wait, let's pause it here. We'll answer your first question. We'll pause it right here.
So, Craig, you've been listening to Treasure for a month solid, and it sounds like that's about it. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You must really like the record, and we appreciate your support and listening. So the question was, will we collaborate again?
You just never know how long you're going to have to wait when it comes to David and me, right?
That's right.
It could be next year. It could be 10 years from now. But no, seriously, I'm sure we'll be doing something again in the not-too-distant future. We've already got a few ideas started.
You know, we don't want to say anything. We don't want to make any commitments, but we are already working together on new music for wherever that will end up and what's going to happen. And I'm personally excited about the things we've started already. So
yeah, I'm pretty excited about the new stuff we're working on. Because with Treasure, we were digging up a lot of old material, stuff that had been 6-7 years old. And we were working with that because we felt a commitment to it and we thought that it should see the light of day. Now, everything we're doing is fresh and new and clean slate, and to me, that's pretty exciting. So I think it'll go probably pretty quickly, and it shouldn't be too long.
Let's hope.
And then my second question is, the music that you alluded to in your first podcast, the unreleased tracks, you actually played one. Would that music ever become available in the future as another purchase or downloads, whatever? Because I know David has some of his unreleased stuff on his site, and I was kind of hoping that Deep Exile might do the same. All right, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. Look forward to the next podcast.
So Craig, what Craig's talking about in the other podcast is the Deep Exile podcast that David and I did at deepexile.com. For those of you Music is Art listeners, David and I are doing another podcast at Deep Exile. The Deep Exile podcast is going to be dedicated more to the stuff that David and I are doing, so we don't take over the Music is Art podcast entirely. So if you just subscribe to both, you'll be good to go. We did an interview with WMSE, like a 3-hour interview, and they've been kind enough to let us put that on the podcast. So that'll be showing up over there at Deep Exile pretty soon. So if you want more, go over there and check that out. And on that first podcast, we played a little piece of an unreleased track that didn't make it to Treasure. So he's wondering if any of that material will be released or be on the website.
Well, if you've been to the Deep Exile website, there's one part of the navigation that's grayed out, and it's called Downloads. And we are going to have some downloads there at some point.
We have yet to decide what that will be, but it will be something, quite possibly, some unreleased material.
We do have quite a few tracks that were created in the process of making Treasure that have not seen the light of day. So possibly we will release those in some form on the website, give them away.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot of unreleased material. None of it is worthy of being released as it is right now.
You're saying our stuff isn't worthy. That's kind of like...
Well, I'm not saying it's not worthy. It's just not done.
It's not ready.
Yeah.
It's not ready for the world. You know, our focus right now is we're working on this new music and we're trying to keep up with keeping people informed and sharing all the things that are happening. I think if we had a lot of time, we could probably go back and play with some of those unreleased tracks and, you know, do something with them.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I think we're moving forward as fast as we can. Craig, you're awesome.
Thanks, Craig. Okay, I think that's all the time we have. We're way out at over 45 minutes now, like 47 minutes. So I think we're going to cut it off here. If we didn't answer your question, I'm sorry. We will try to answer you in an email. Thanks to everybody who called. Thank you, David, for being here and helping with this.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
Wasn't really sure how this was going to work. We could have had no calls, but you guys called in, and we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling. As always, you can send us an email to podcast@musicisart.com. Visit us online at musicisart.com. And don't forget to head over to deepexile.com and subscribe to our other podcast over there and keep up with everything that David and I are doing. My name is John Jenkins. This has been the Music is Art podcast, number 19B. We're going to leave you with the title track from Treasure. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.